This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about strawberries.
Which is a little Valentine's Day tangential.
Sure.
Also a little late.
But
sure.
Not too late.
Yeah, you can be in that spirit whenever you want.
Exactly. Yeah. I prefer for it not to actually be on Valentine's Day.
See? And if you hit the sales right, this is perfect time.
Oh, yeah.
Valentine's Day.
This is prime cheap candy season that you, I guess, if you're me, still feel guilty about because it's made with slave labor. Sorry.
No, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Good to be aware.
And this is going to be a Lawrence Killjoy Corner episode later on. There's lots of other delightful stuff.
Yes.
Don't worry too much.
Yeah, a regular amount of worry.
Yeah. Normal baseline worry.
Yes. Oh, I think that's appropriate. That's appropriate. Well, I'll start with a pleasant memory of mine.
Okay.
I'll never forget the first time I had fresh strawberries and whipped cream, which is like, it just seems so obvious, but I'd never had it. I think I was eight or nine.
Uh-huh.
My grandparents were staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Midtown Atlanta because, yes, they had some money.
Ooh.
And they had a dessert buffet in their room.
In their room?
In their room.
Dang.
Dang indeed. And my grandfather made me a bowl of strawberries and cream, and it was revelatory.
Ah.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm A, delighted by this delightful memory, but B, like, I was like, I've never seen whipped cream plus strawberries called strawberries and cream before. I've always seen it as sweetened cream, like non-whipped cream, sometimes flavored with vanilla and stuff, plus strawberries.
Right.
But a quick Google pulls up recipes both ways. So I don't know. Either way, delicious. Yes.
I never had it with the sweetened cream. I'm a whipped cream gal, I guess. I guess.
I both are nice.
Well, I believe it. I believe it. I used to pick strawberries when we lived in Statesboro, Georgia. And one of my favorite things was when my mom used to juice fresh strawberries and oranges. The best.
Ooh,
the best.
Yeah.
And my fave smoothie flavor at my hometown mall was strawberry.
Huh.
Just straight strawberry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I went strawberry picking a few times up in Ohio when I was a little kid. But yeah, I haven't done it since I've been down here.
Yeah. I think that might be a little kid activity.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm still pretty into being out in a field that smells like fresh strawberries. And I do grow strawberries at home.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I've got a little plant that's very, very tenacious despite our best efforts to kill it. It's still hanging on. It's still producing strawberries after like 3 years.
Go. Good for you, strawberry plant.
I know, right?
Right? Strawberries are forever associated with Iron Man 2 now for me.
Oh, right. Because there's that scene where Tony is trying to apologize to Pepper and he brings her that flat of strawberries.
Mm-hmm. And she's allergic to strawberries.
And she's like, what's the one thing I'm allergic to?
Yes.
And he's holding this heckin' flat of strawberries. It's real cute.
Yes, it is. They recovered from it eventually.
They did.
I do have a friend who won't eat strawberries because of the seeds. She doesn't like eating seeds, which I know is a thing.
Yeah. I have some friends who dislike pomegranate for the same reason.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into our question, I just want to put in here, I found a 515-page book, I guess, on the strawberry.
Called The Strawberry,
yes,
right?
It is. So it's clear, straight to the point. I appreciated that. And my primary takeaway from it was that it took folks a long time to figure out how strawberries work and that breeds of strawberries have fantastic names.
Oh,
that's
the takeaway from 515 pages.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't read it, but I'm happy that you did.
It was very, very in-depth about crossbreeding strawberries.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
But okay, let's get to our question.
Yes.
Strawberries. What are they?
Well, strawberries are small fruits from a number of species in the genus Fragaria. The cultivated variety that we're usually eating from supermarkets is F. ananassa, and they're usually a red, sort of round to oblong, heart or kind of tongue-shaped fruit with yellow or tan or black seeds dotting the outer skin, though varieties that bear yellow fruit do exist as well. And yeah, they grow on herbaceous, meaning like soft and not woody, plants that lay close to the ground and can propagate by sending off shoots called runners, and they will dang propagate your whole yard if you do not contain them.
Really?
It's true. You will have strawberries pop up in places that you never expected strawberries to be.
Another horror movie idea. Death by strawberry.
They grow pretty little white or yellow flowers with yellow centers that then develop out into these greenish-white berries that eventually ripen into that red or yellow color and have like a bright, sweet flavors and just a touch of tartness. But I said berries.
You did.
That's kind of a lie. I know.
What?
A strawberry is not, botanically speaking, a berry.
What?
So, what's a berry?
Good question.
Well, a berry is a type of fruit that's a fleshy throughout and does not contain anything stiff and structurey inside other than the seeds. So, like peaches and olives are not berries because they contain seeds, check, but those seeds have like a hard outer shell.
Okay.
And apples are not berries because they have those papery bits that are holding the seeds in the core. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And berries can have skins. Everything from grapes to eggplants to tomatoes to bananas to pineapples are botanical berries.
But none of those have berries in the name.
I know. So we have to return to our original question. What's a strawberry? The red fleshy part of a strawberry is technically not the fruit of the plant. It's the receptacle for the plant's fruits and seeds. The crunchy bits on the outside that your friend doesn't like,
yes.
Those are the fruits.
Oh, my gosh.
And they each contain a seed.
Oh.
The receptacle feeds the fruits and seeds. Like if you cut open a strawberry, you can see the tiny white threads or veins that run out from the center to each fruit and seed. It entices, the receptacle entices animals to come eat the fruits and seeds and disperse them. And the fruits are hard to help prevent the seeds from being digested during the process.
My mind is blown.
I know, right? Oh, man. This type of fruit, like small hard ones that protect seeds, is called an achene, which leads to all sorts of good puns.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And thanks, by the way, to Botanist in the Kitchen, which is a great blog, for their excellent breakdown of how all of that works.
And strawberries are used in all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Smoothies, juices, pies, cakes, wines, cheesecakes.
Oh, yeah.
Salads, soups, muffins, jams, candies, popsicles, ice cream. Over half of American children pick the strawberry as their favorite fruit. And all kinds of strawberry festivals. Popular when it comes to fragrances, too, and things like lip balms, candles, perfumes.
The name derives from the practice of putting down straw around the plants to keep weeds down and keep the berries up off the ground. Latin language group names, can you help me with the French one?
Is that fraise?
Fraise, mm-hmm. Yeah, fraise or fresa, stuff like that. They all derive from the berries' fragrance.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of, what we perceive as being the scent of strawberries is about a dozen to a couple dozen compounds, but mostly one called HDMF, or strawberry furanone, or by a brand name used in the food and scent industries, furanial.
Furanial?
Furanial. Yes, that, sure, totally.
Okay.
also speaking of scent, the reason that those huge strawberries that you buy in the store can taste sort of like nothing— is that over the past century or so, as they've been selectively bred to increase size and firmness, which by firmness I really mean like durability for travel after picking, and overall crop yield, the sugar and flavor content have decreased. It's not always a trade-off, but it can be.
Yeah, we were talking about that. We were talking about how there's nothing quite as sad or surprisingly sad as a
nothing.
Bland strawberry.
Yeah, right? Especially yeah. When they look so big and gorgeous and beautiful and you're like, yes. Oh, man. And then it's just like, this might as well be juicy cardboard.
Right, right. Because you're always, well, at least I would dig through and find the most colorful and I think, oh, this one will be it. Not always.
I always look for smaller ones at the store.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that the key?
I feel like it is.
Okay. I'll try that method next time. But in the meantime, let's talk about nutrition.
With a punch of dietary fiber and just a boatload of micronutrients, including over 100% of your daily recommended value of vitamin C in just 8 berries.
Ooh.
Yeah. Strawberries are a great addition to your diet, though they are best paired with something with protein and fat in it, because especially with their sugar content, they will help fill you up, but they will not keep you going on their own.
Right.
As we are kind of finding out, because I ate mostly strawberries this morning as I was finishing my research, and I'm a little wacky today, guys.
It's an experiment, and it's all for the show.
There you go.
Plus, that's just what happened to be for our breakfast this morning, our work breakfast.
Yes.
So.
Not my fault?
No. But all in the name of science.
Oh, sure. Science!
And we do have some numbers for you.
Mm-hmm. As of 2017, Americans spent some $52 million on strawberries around Valentine's Day. I know, right?
Whoa. How many of them were chocolate-covered?
Oh, gosh.
We may never know for sure. The strawberry industry is worth an annual $1.4 billion. By weight, strawberries are the fifth most consumed fresh fruit. The United States Department of Agriculture reports that per capita consumption of strawberries, fresh and frozen, at about 4.85 pounds. Most of the American yield comes from California. They produce an annual billion pounds a year.
Yeah, like 80% of America's strawberries are grown in California, and a third of the strawberries in the world are from there.
They are a big name in the strawberry world,
yes.
As is this one, Driscoll. They are extremely protective of their breeds of strawberries, and they've been involved in at least one high-profile lawsuit alleging competitors have stolen their proprietary varieties, and their breeders are known as Joy Makers.
Huh.
Joy Makers.
Joy Makers. That is some interesting corporate spin. I love it.
We love some good corporate spin around here. Strawberries and cream is a popular Wimbledon tradition where almost 140,000 are sold. I did not know this.
Yeah, me neither. But I guess I've never been super up on my Wimbledon tradition. But yeah, that accounts for like 30 tons of strawberries in a 2-week period.
My brain says no. Move on. Move on. Because of the shape and color of strawberries, they have long been associated with love. It was the symbol of the goddess of love, Venus. And 17th century author Dr. William Butler once wrote, "Doubtless God could have made a better berry, but doubtless God never did."
Aw, dang.
Yeah, strawberry.
That is some high praise for a strawberry.
It is. And actually, there's a lot of really good strawberry quotes out there if that's something that interests you.
We went
with that one. But there are plenty. And there's also plenty of history.
Oh, gosh, there is. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, okay. Wild strawberries have been around for a long, 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 long time, native throughout Europe and North America. However, early records of them are sparse since they weren't really a big part of agriculture back then. Since ancient times, people have been eating wild strawberries, but they didn't really seek them out since these versions would have been bitter and tough. Writings from ancient Rome mention strawberries in the context of their medicinal use. They believed it worked for all kinds of things. Kidney stones to melancholy and other depressive illnesses. Uh-huh. Roman poets Virgil and Ovid mentioned strawberries in their works in 1st century CE, but they mentioned them more in the context of a decoration than a food.
Huh.
Pliny mentioned it also, but only briefly.
Huh.
Yes. They were mentioned in a 1990-1000 CE-ish Japanese book, and they were mentioned there as a sweet treat. In 1916 CE, King Charles III of West Francia knighted a citizen who presented him with a plate of delicious strawberries as fraise, the French word for strawberry. And he presented him with a coat of arms with two diagonal lines with strawberry leaves and three quadrants. A century later, the King of France asked the strawberry clan, to go to Scotland to subdue a rebel named Macbeth. The name was anglicized to Fraser.
And this comes back in a minute.
Yes, it does. During medieval times in Europe, strawberries often symbolize righteousness and perfection. Because of that, stonemasons carved strawberries in altars and around the tops of pillars in cathedrals and churches. Strawberries appeared in art and miniatures across Europe. People ate them, too, sometimes boiled with spices and served on bread,
mm-hmm.
which I'm intrigued by.
I know, right?
This was all during the time of Illumination, when artists started adopting a more natural, liberated style. Monks were a big part of this, using this style in their prayer books. This was happening simultaneously with a desire to glorify the Virgin. Several paintings depict this, whether it's Joseph holding out a strawberry to Jesus to convince him to walk to him, or a group of angels gathering strawberries for the Virgin Mary and baby Jesus. The strawberry was becoming more widely known at this time and was admired for its beauty. By the way, this style of illumination, if you've ever seen the classic Valentine's Day movie Midsommar, very similar to some of the art that they used. Anyway, the three partition
that is now my favorite Valentine's movie.
You know, they showed it at the Plaza on Valentine's Day.
They did.
Anyway, the ultimate breakup film. The three-partition leaf of the strawberry was believed to represent the Holy Trinity, the strawberry itself, a drop of Christ's blood, and the five flower petals, the five wounds of Christ. In 1386, the Royal Gardens of King Charles V had 12,000 strawberry plants. In 1485, one of the first botanical illustrations of a strawberry appeared in herbaries. They were still largely viewed as ornamental, though. Europeans were cultivating strawberries by the 1300s, particularly in France, where it was seen as an aphrodisiac.
Oh.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Newlyweds frequently were served strawberry soup, which I've had and is delicious.
Oh, really?
Huh. Oh, yeah. It's just kind of like a chilled puree of strawberries and I think cream.
That does sound delicious.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hieronymus Bosch painted strawberries into his famous or perhaps infamous Garden of Earthly Delights triptych around the year 1500.
Mm-hmm. The large-scale cultivation of European strawberries was taking place in Paris by the 1600s. This was around the time it started to become equally food and ornamental. Cardinal Thomas Wolsey, a member of King Henry VIII's court, gets the credit for coming up with the combo of strawberries and cream in 1509, although it was almost definitely a chef that came up with it.
Probably. I can't imagine he spent that much time in his kitchen.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. He was integral in the construction of Hampton Court in Tudor, England, an establishment that fed over 600 people twice a day. And this dessert was an easy one to prepare for a large amount of people. 500 points of good husbandry out of 1557 suggested that strawberry cultivation was an appropriate, quote, employment for women. Wife into the garden and set me a plot with strawberry roots, the best to be got. Such growing abroad among thorns in the wood, well chosen and picked, prove excellent good.
Okay.
Sure.
I like strawberries too.
I feel like I just set a spell and I'm going to have some kind of weird strawberry experience later.
Only you can make your dreams possible.
You're right. You're right. I need to take control over my own destiny. The 1593 book Gardener's Labyrinth came with this tidbit about strawberries. They be much eaten at all men's tables in the summertime with wine and sugar, and they will grow in gardens until the bigness of the mulberry. The strawberry requires small labor, but by diligence of the gardener becometh so great that the same yieldeth fair and big berries as the berries of the bramble in the hedge.
Huh.
The bramble in the hedge.
The bramble in the hedge.
Mm-hmm.
In 1709, Louis XIV's doctor apparently forbade him from eating strawberries for reasons unknown, though the book History of Food suggests that it may have been because he was known to overindulge in anything that he liked and that strawberries were his favorite fruit, especially in wine.
Mm.
Because apparently the fashion at the time dictated that strawberries and cream was a lady's dish.
Oh, no.
I can't have that.
No.
He also apparently held a poetry competition about strawberries.
Well, that's kind of endearing.
Yeah. There's a couple poems in French if you want to attempt to read them.
Yeah.
Or if we can get Casey on the case in here.
Casey on the case. Our many listeners wants to send us some kind of slam poetry reading about strawberries. That would be amazing. That'd be amazing. In 1712 or 1714... differs depending on the source. Mm-hmm. A French mathematician / mapmaker, also sometimes described as a spy,
okay,
named Amadei Francois Frezier, returned from Chile with the Chilean strawberry, descended from the aforementioned Fraziers.
Okay.
The strawberry clan.
Okay.
Yes. This strawberry, the Chilean strawberry, was desired for its size, but the European climate did not suit the Chilean strawberry until it was crossed with the Virginia strawberry, a New World variety that arrived in Europe in the 1600s, resulting in our modern garden strawberry in 1750-ish in Brittany, France.
Yeah, like no one did this on purpose. It was just this wonderful accident, or at least like an accident that led to the sturdier, larger berries that we know today, and which at the time were able to be shipped out to Paris and London.
Yes, the book I mentioned at the top, The Strawberry, 515 pages. I mean, it was just so many experiments of crossing strawberries with different strawberries, and they didn't know why it was happening or what was working. What, like, they couldn't figure out.
Like, what specifically about this plant versus this plant right. led to this other plant.
Right. And the terminology was described in ways that was very confusing because it was like masculine strawberry versus feminine strawberry.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole thing with the sex of strawberries.
Yeah.
It's actually super fascinating. I didn't make notes about it because it's also kind of dull.
Yeah.
And complicated.
It's somehow both at the same time.
Well, they're... Okay, quick sidebar. Mm-hmm. There are masculine ones, there are male strawberries and female strawberries, and there are some hermaphrodite strawberries.
Right.
And the way that they breed, therefore, can be a bunch of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
They are also, like, the most recent plant known to have developed male and female plants.
Mm-hmm.
Most plants originally were hermaphroditic, but, yeah, I don't know.
The strawberry.
The strawberry. This is why I didn't prepare.
It was very complicated in that book, but they were into it.
Yeah.
Again, that was one of my main takeaways. They were determined to figure this out. They were really into it. All right, back to some history. In 1764, 17-year-old Antoine Nicolas Duchesne gifted a pot of Chilean strawberries to King Louis XV. The berries were painted for the Royal Botanic Library, and Duchesne was tasked with raising more of these strawberries at the Versailles Kitchen Garden. He went on to write a treatise on strawberries at, like, 17.
Huh.
And I think it took him several years, but he was very young when it came out. And
dang.
He was, like, seen as the expert on the strawberry for a while.
Cool.
So good for that guy.
Yeah.
Legend goes that prominent member of Napoleon's court, Madame Tallien, bathed in fresh strawberry juice. We don't know how frequently.
Okay.
But one bath called for 22 pounds of strawberries.
22 pounds of gosh.
But wouldn't you just be sticky?
I feel like you would just be sticky.
And then all the flies and bees would come at you. Did she think this through? Maybe it is just a legend. Maybe that's just one of those stories people said. Yeah. When the first European colonists arrived in North America, they found that wild strawberries were abundant. Native Americans used them in their cooking. Strawberry bread was probably present at the earliest American feast.
Mm-hmm.
This meant that strawberries weren't really cultivated until the 19th century when a fancy new dessert had a meteoric rise. Strawberries and cream. Yep.
Huh.
New York became the center of strawberry production and shipping after the advent of refrigerated railroad cars. They were a popular street food in big cities, the strawberries and cream.
Oh, okay.
Street food.
Huh.
Yeah. One Cherokee legend describes an argument between a man and a woman, and she runs from the man. The man implored the creator to slow her down so he could catch up with her and apologize to her. So the creator threw down berries to slow her down, but she didn't stop until... she encountered strawberries. She filled a basket with them and returned to the man, ready to forgive.
Yeah, by the time the guy caught up, she was like, oh, man, we've got strawberries. And he was like, I like those, too.
Yeah. Strawberries bring people together. I don't know if I'd use them. You know, your mileage may vary in arguments, but...
maybe Tony Stark knows about this legend, and that's why he brings Pepper... the strawberries.
Yeah, maybe he knew what he was doing all along. We don't give Tony Stark enough credit.
For his Cherokee mythology.
Yes.
We don't. It's true.
It's true. We need to reconsider this. U.S. strawberry production was common by 1825.
And that's around when large-scale production began in Europe, too. Throughout the 1800s, more strawberries were produced in the U.S. and Europe, partially because the Industrial Revolution and its speedy trains and ships allowed these still relatively delicate berries to make it into cities from far-flung farms, thus calling for more production.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In 1838, horticulturist Charles Hovey debuted the Hovey cultivar. In 1850, we had the first strawberry festival. Strawberries and cream were a feature at the very first Wimbledon, held in 1877. I almost went on a very big Wimbledon rabbit hole, but I had to pull it together.
Oh, good for you.
Yes, but if anyone's ever been and knows about the food traditions there.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, let us
goodness.
Know. Oh, gosh. We'll have to go. Well, we'll have to have a Derby episode, a Wimbledon episode,
yes.
All the things.
I can play some tennis. I can't compete in Wimbledon, but I played tennis back in my day. So I would appreciate it, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. During World War II, what would become Driscoll's, when a group of growers hired some breeders and began their journey to dominating the berry market, sort of got its first, its foundation, I guess. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, and Japanese internment, Japanese immigrants dominated the U.S. strawberry market. While modern strawberries were introduced in Japan in the 1840s, first as decorations, it wasn't until the spread of greenhouses during and after World War II that strawberries became more affordable and widespread there.
Also, after World War II, in the 1950s, for about 30 years, farmers in California had been struggling with this soil-borne fungus that would cause strawberry crops to wilt. It's frequently called wilt. Mm-hmm. Researchers in the 50s finally came upon a combination of compounds that could combat this. Unfortunately, that combination was two toxic compounds. Chlorpicrin, which is a tear gas that was used in World War I, and methyl bromide, which is a pesticide that was started to be used in World War II. But this combo was so effective at killing wilt fungi that it became basically the industry standard to fumigate your strawberry soil with the combination. Like, apparently banks in California would not lend money to farmers who were not fumigating.
Oh, wow.
It allowed yields to increase and growers to focus on creating new varieties.
Right. And in 1958, Driscoll debuted their first proprietary strawberry, Z5A.
And the industry does still use these compounds, even though they're a danger to the environment and farm workers and local communities who get exposed to them. There's an excellent episode of the podcast Gastropod all about it. The episode is called Running on Fumes, Strawberry's Dirty Secret. It came out just last year in 2019. Go check that out for lots more. Short story, there are alternatives being investigated. For example, lots of farmers in Europe use greenhouses and either hydroponics or other media than soil. But unfortunately, those methods are kind of expensive. And so the industry has built it up to such a point that it would cost more than it's worth to a lot of farmers to switch over. A little bit more on that in a second. Yes. In the meanwhile, strawberry fields.
So I totally forgot about this. When I was doing the outline, I just kind of randomly thought about that and just put strawberry fields forever ? And Lauren answered my question.
Yeah. Okay. So the Beatles song Strawberry Fields Forever came out in 1967. And it is partially in reference to this Salvation Army location in Liverpool, England, which is a Victorian era house and the surrounding grounds, which were called Strawberry Field. So John Lennon spent time there as a kid and eventually wrote this song. It was a children's home from the 1930s through almost the end of the century and has been reopened as a historic site and education center for local kids with differing learning abilities. There's also a part of a Central Park called Strawberry Fields that was dedicated to Lennon in 1981, the year after his death in his home near Central Park.
Yes. And as you can imagine, quite a big tourist draw. Mm-hmm. But usually there's someone playing music and very pretty over there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a nice little stone mosaic with Imagine in the middle.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Researchers mapped the first genome of a strawberry in 2011, the wood strawberry, which is F. vesca. The common commercial variety didn't get its genome mapped all the way until 2019. It's more complicated. It has 8 sets of chromosomes, meaning it has 4 direct parents. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to contend with, like, genetically speaking. This genome map might lead to new developments in breeding varieties that have more of the traits that we want, like flavor and resistance to pests like wilt, and fewer that we don't want, which in turn might finally help get those toxic compounds out of the industry. It's bad, y'all. Like one of the downsides of methyl bromide is that it contributes to ozone depletion.
Ooh.
But it's considered so crucial to large-scale strawberry production that the strawberry industry has successfully lobbied for its continued use for 30 years.
Wow.
Albeit it's been scaled back to just in nurseries as of 2016, but it's still like, whew, gosh. There's also a whole book about that called Wilted, Pathogens, Chemicals, and the Fragile Future of the Strawberry Industry. If you're looking for interesting, if slightly depressing, read.
Something to supplement Killjoy Corner.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's hopeful in the end because it's saying that with better farming practices and more awareness of all of these compounds that we started using in the 1900s that aren't great.
Right.
that are good for very specific things but are not great for other reasons. That by just being more aware of stuff like that and by changing consumer and industry expectations about the cost of food, that we can all make good change in the world.
And we all want to do that.
We do.
Yes.
And I wanted to end on a slightly nicer note than that one. So tell us a nice story, Annie.
Okay. So as I was doing the research for this episode, there was one variety of strawberry that kept coming up. It was kind of like a white whale almost. Like people would mention it. And I didn't really know what they were talking about. But I found a whole article that in 2016, David Karp at the Smithsonian reported on the journey of horticulturist Harry Jan Schwartz to try and breed the favorite strawberry of Jane Austen.
Okay.
That has long been out of the rotation. And it's called the musk strawberry.
Yes, because of its musky scent.
Oh, yeah. It has a very strong smell. It was described as spicy and floral and a mix of honey and wine and cheese.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a popular cultivar in Europe from the 16th to the 19th centuries, and Jane Austen loved it. But they were soft and didn't transport well, so they fell out of fashion in favor of hardier cultivars. They were still around. They were just very, very rare. FDR fell in love with them after trying some as a child while traveling in Germany. So much so, he asked the Secretary of Agriculture to dabble into musk varieties of strawberries.
Huh.
It's like, we got to get these back.
Yes. Bring me my strawberries.
Yeah. It was a really interesting read. We're giving you a lot of little sources you can go check out after this. But it was cool because the person who was trying to bring these back just described him trying like all of these strawberries. Nope.
That's what I understand a lot of strawberry researchers wind up doing, just eating like a lot of strawberries and being like, no, not quite. Yeah. Like,
right.
Oh, maybe this one? Yeah, I don't know.
I can't imagine that. You know, our very first episode we did on sparkling wine, our friend, this brewer, he said something that stayed with me to this day, was that he was waiting until his palate was refined enough to be able to appreciate some really expensive, I think from the Titanic.
Yeah, bottle
yes.
of something that he's just saving. He's like, yeah, my palate's not developed enough
right.
to taste it yet, so I'm just going to wait.
I still think about that. Yeah, but I mean, I guess if every day you're trying strawberries, you learn to pick out on the certain things.
Yeah, I guess.
Gosh. Very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive. That's about what we have to say on the strawberry.
We do have a little bit more for you, but first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Beautiful. Except for my elbow hit the mic. I apologize for that.
You know,
I had to do the choreography. Laura wrote, "You don't know how excited I was today to open my podcast app to see the title Waxing Poetic About Sticky Rice in my podcast feed. As someone with a Thai mother who was born and lived for a few years in Vientiane, Laos, I have tried my whole life to express my love and admiration for glutinous rice, or as we always called it growing up, sticky rice. We ate it with almost every meal, much like how other cultures use bread to mop up sauces. We use balls of sticky rice to scoop up larb, top with spicy satay, and swirl in papaya salad."
Ooh.
"But no one I grew up with had ever heard of it. And even nowadays, it is rare to find on Asian menus. Once a friend of mine asked how to make sticky rice like they serve with Chinese takeout, I was aghast. First, I informed him that the rice from Chinese takeout was not sticky rice, and then proceeded to inform him that to make rice that doesn't cook into individual little loose grains, it would be impossible to lift with a pair of chopsticks. He had to start with a rice that does not come from a box and has nothing to do with the San Francisco treat. My two girls grew up loving sticky rice too, which became a bit awkward when I took my youngest to her pediatrician and the doctor asked her what her favorite foods were. In addition to glutinous rice, my daughter loves steamed artichokes. So her three-year-old reply was, stinky rice and leaves. She didn't know they were called artichokes. I could only wonder what my doc thought I fed my child on the daily." Stinky rice and leaves. I mean, it sounds of the thing she could have said.
Yeah, that's not the worst.
Not the worst.
3-year-olds are good at the worst.
Yes, yes, they are.
Oh, Antonio wrote, "I'm the longtime listener who wrote in last year about the pineapple mention in The Favorite." Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I was catching up on episodes that came out around the holidays, and the pineapple redux episode was like an awesome belated New Year's surprise. I've visited Hawaii quite a bit in the past few years, so I really enjoyed the episodes related to your trip, especially the visit to a pineapple farm. I just got back from Kauai, where I toured the Kauai Sugarloaf Pineapple Farm. The Kauai Sugarloaf is a white pineapple that's super sweet and fleshy that you can even eat the core. Unfortunately, the pineapples are in short supply, and the farm had a lot of back orders. Each person was only able to bring back a baby pineapple you picked, so we made sure to power wash them twice to ensure that they could pass agricultural inspections to bring back to the mainland. We gave one to our pineapple-obsessed friend who is attempting to plant them in our considerably cooler Northern California climate. This friend, on a previous trip to Hawaii, vowed to eat a pineapple a day. That scheme came in handy when we went to the beach and my husband and I both got stung by jellyfish. We had no remedies nearby and didn't want to pee on the wound. We realized we needed something acidic to neutralize the sting. Our friend had packed some pineapple chunks as snacks for his family, so we just started rubbing our limbs with pineapple chunks, which did the job just fine. As for the Sugarloaf pineapple, they're only sold at farmers markets and stores on Kauai and at a few specialty grocery stores, when in supply, on Oahu and Maui. One can order and get them shipped to the mainland. But better yet, you can all do another saver field trip to the islands you missed and visit the farm yourselves. A pineapple a day keeps the stingers away.
Well, there you go, if it's doctor recommended. I suppose we have to return.
I guess we gotta go.
Yes. Oh, wow. I never would have thought to put pineapple on a jellyfish sting, but now my mind is expanded.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. We learn such wonderful things from y'all listeners.
We really do, and we would love to continue to do so. Mm. So thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.